You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is Series 2, Episode 10 for Friday, November 4th, 2022. It's JJ Sefton along with CBD and returning for our pre-election midterm predictions, prognostications, and I can't think of anything else that goes with a P, so I'm dumbfounded. But anyway, he is a treasure, our co-blogger and friend and polling expert guru, Dave in Florida. Dave, CBD, welcome to this show.
Hey, how you doing, folks?
Thanks for having me back again. I am very happy to be only about 4 days left until I can finally take a break from this nonsense.
Well, we are here and 4 days to go. Everything seems to have tightened up to the point where Roman Polanski wants to marry it. But in all seriousness, people should get a clearer picture of really where we're headed, especially in the last couple of weeks with the, you know, with these ridiculous October surprises of everything from Katie Hobbs, the Watergate break-in that was really an illegal immigrant, to the so-called attack on Paul Pelosi by, as it turns out, seemingly a gay outcall prostitute with a hammer, but not a MAGA terrorist. But anyway, we're going to go state by state and into the races. I think that's the most convenient way to do it. So, CBD and Dave, why don't you guys lead the way? Take it away. Let's start at the top. I guess maybe Arizona.
First of all, I have a request of Dave. I would like you to lie to me and tell me that my scumbag representative in New Jersey 5 is going to get dumped finally after a couple of years of his pathetic pretending that he is some sort of fiscal conservative. He's a hard lefty. He's a bit of a sleaze bag. So just lie to me and tell me that New Jersey 5 is in the bag for the Republicans.
Okay, I'll lie to you.
Thank you.
In all seriousness, now I'll be honest with you. I only look at a very few House races because I'm looking for races that are barometers. So I look at places like Virginia 2, Virginia 7 to give me a barometer of where the House is going. I don't look at all of those races. There's just too many of them. But do you know the Biden's margin of victory in your district?
Yes. Oh, boy. He won by about 12 points.
Okay, that's on the edge. That's on the edge. So your district is in play at that point. The rule of thumb right now is any district that was Biden plus 9 or less, maybe 10, is probably going to flip. And when you get into a Biden plus 11, 12, 13, then there's a possibility, and it's coming down to turnout and all of the other unknowns associated with this election. You know, who's showing up to the polls? You know, so, I mean, we have a good idea of, you know, the default positions of Republicans, independents, and Democrats. And where we are now is just who actually votes.
You know, that's actually a fascinating point, because one of the problems in 2020, of course, is that from whatever you might think about Donald Trump, he was a polarizing figure and he did drive Democrats to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, next week, Donald Trump is not on any ballot and he simply.
Well, they're trying hard.
And they are
trying hard to make this a Trump election.
Yeah, they're failing. But what they have done, of course, is polarized it in the other direction. And that is that there are plenty of Republicans who see $4 gasoline. By the way, it's at $4 right now where I live. They see $4 gasoline and $6 a dozen eggs, and they want to vote.
Yeah.
Anyway, hopefully that'll be the case in New Jersey 5. So I will vote early. I will vote often. And maybe I'll slash the tires of all of my liberal neighbors.
Yeah, so make sure you vote on election day. That's the safest way to make sure your vote counts.
Yes.
You know, I was going to say the other X factor in all these things is our wonderful economy, which, by the way, is not in a recession and is booming, according to Ron Klain and Janet Yellen and everybody else in this wonderful administration of ours, that it is hitting everybody hard and it is hitting, you know, the traditional Democrat voting blocks, blacks, Latinos, so on and so forth. And there is even an interesting article I've seen in at least in a number of outlets saying that women, you know, suburban women who are supposedly the Democrat superstar block these days are really flipping now to GOP candidates in these races. So, you know, anything is possible. I mean,
sorry to interrupt, JJ, this has been a point that has been ongoing for the last 6 months. I've been hammering this home for the last 6 months, and it has not changed. From a polling standpoint, the economy is the number one issue. It has been the number one issue for the entire year. It has never changed. Dobb decision did nothing. Paul Pelosi being hammered did nothing. Nothing has changed that. Over 50% of the electorate says the economy is their number one issue that they're voting on. And this is consistent across all of the polling. And the Republicans lead by over 20 points on that issue in all of the polling. So anybody who thinks that this election is based on abortion or any other factor is fooling themselves. This is an economy election. It has always been an economy election. And the only chance the Democrats ever had, and they admitted this back in March, the only chance they ever had was to get a control on it and get the inflation down, and they didn't do it.
Well, they couldn't do it because all their policies, which they
– Oh, yeah. It was impossible.
Inflexibly, they're anti-free market. They are pro-government, big control, anti-oil, which oil, as we all know, drives everything. Pun intended, no pun intended. And so they're just not going to – they will just never change. And so there it is.
Yeah, and they're going to be punished for it. I mean, that's what's going to happen on Tuesday. They're going to be severely punished for it. Okay. So anyway, let's get back to the states. Okay. I want to preface this. Okay. I stated and I made it public. Okay. So on the board, I said, this is my prediction. I'm going out early so you all can measure me on it. Back in June, I said over 240 Republicans in the House, at least 52 Republican senators. Okay. And I've stayed consistent with that prediction. Nothing has changed my mind over the last 5 months. So when the time comes and people are measuring me, that's the number I'm going to personally be saying, that's a wave. If you got over 240 and you got over 52, it was a red wave. It was a red tsunami. So I don't want people coming along saying, well, we didn't get 255 or we didn't get 55. So it's not a red tsunami. That's bullshit.
Yeah, you're always going to get the chuckleheads on the board who are going to, you know, just move the goalposts.
Yeah, they're going to move. And I know it's going to happen on Wednesday. They're going to try to move the goalposts. They move the goalposts. I'm calling them out on it.
Okay? Good.
You know, outside of the podcast, I think we should just give you a post election, and you can just control that. And anybody who gives you grief, you can just let them freaking have it with both barrels.
Actually, okay. that's a great idea, Dave. Next Thursday, I'm serious. The morning rant. Would you like it?
I have a lot of things going on.
Okay, no problem.
This next week, so I probably don't have the time to do it, unfortunately.
Right.
But I would love to. Maybe the following week would be good when all the tempers have cooled down and all the votes are finally counted. So
I think it could be finally counted in 2 weeks, not according to Biden, and that's really gets me crazy. But in any event, okay.
All right, let's go. Let's start with the Senate and Dave.
Well, let's go through the states. I'll just go one by one. Let's start with the ones that are completely over. I don't even know why anybody would still be talking about it. Start with Florida because obviously I know Florida very well. Been over for weeks. DeSantis and Rubio are going to win by double digits, so we can stop talking about those. Wisconsin. Been over for weeks. Ron Johnson's going to win by 6 or 7. Michaels is going to win by 2 or 3. Also been over for weeks. Anybody at this point claiming that a Democrat is going to win in Wisconsin is just fooling themselves. And you saw that deputy election supervisor that just got fired.
Yes.
In Milwaukee. That's a sign that people know they're not going to get away with it this year. In 2020, she would have gotten away with that. People aren't putting up with it, and people know that they could be in trouble if they support that. So I think Wisconsin's going to be a pretty clean election this time. Okay, so Wisconsin, Georgia. Georgia's over. Kemp's going to win that by a lot, probably 8 points or so. Walker's holding on to a pretty steady 3-point lead or more. Probably going to go higher.
So he's flirting with 50% then.
That's where we are. It's that 50% because that's a runoff state. He's going to win. The question is whether he wins next week or on December 4th. That's the only question right now. And it's, I'm personally giving about a 50-50 that he breaks 50%. And part of my reason for that is he was hugely underestimated in the primary. Okay, everybody thought he would, you know, he might win or might barely squeak it out. And he win, like by 40 points, something yeah. insane like that. You know, so his support has always been higher than the polling, and I think that's just going to continue.
Well, you know, the smear factor with the stupid, secret abortion, a woman coming forth one a week with a Gloria retread, that has completely fizzled. So, and if he's where he is, where you're saying he is right now, even after all of that sliming, yeah, I think he's pretty much. Yeah.
No, I think that stuff helped him, frankly. I mean, that, I think he needed a little bit of a fundraising boost at that point, and he got it because of that. I mean, people gave him money because they're tired of this. And that's a sign of this election. People are not putting up with crap anymore. Okay. It's like, we know the games you're playing. Okay. We're not going to fall for it anymore. So, you know, it's just the way people are feeling in this election. I said 2 years ago that this election was shaping up to be the voter vengeance election. And that's what it's turning into. You know, people are pissed. They are going to take out their anger at the ballot box. And they are already. I mean, you can see the early returns and see GOP is way up from 2018, not measuring against 2020, way up from 2018. Democrat response is way down from 2018. So, okay, so we see Florida, Georgia, Wisconsin. Let's go ahead and cover Arizona. Arizona, I think, is also done. Carrie Lake has won that weeks ago. It's been very tight in the polling, but Masters has had a very good couple of weeks. The Libertarian dropping out and endorsing him did actually help.
That was actually impressive and quite unexpected. That's an honest man doing what is best for America and for Arizona.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, but he was polling about 2% about 3%. He's still going to get 1%, maybe 2%, because he's on the ballot. I mean, people can still vote for him. I mean, just him pulling doesn't – the ballots are printed, so that doesn't actually change too much. But in the polling, his about 2% of the electorate moved to Masters after he did that. So where you had Masters officially – which I never really believed. I never really believed he was down by one. But officially he was like down by one. He moved to up by one. The 2 days after that, Masters took the lead in polling in Maricopa County. He had always been a little bit down in Maricopa. Well, yeah, well, that's 60% of the electorate is in Maricopa. So if Masters is winning Maricopa, he's winning the state.
So a quick question. In general, I'm not talking about just Arizona. Do independents vote early or do they wait?
It's a mixed bag.
Is it? Okay.
It's a mixed bag. And there's no real rule of thumb on how the independents. It's really a state by state thing. Interesting thing with Arizona. Arizona is mostly a vote by mail early vote state. Traditionally, about 60-70% of the votes are in prior. And this year, it's going to be a huge election day turnout. And that's a result from 2020. People are not going to trust their votes to the mail. So you're going to see something like 40-50% of the vote in Arizona will come in on election day. And that's one of the things that will drive the counting to take days in Arizona. Because what happens is you call them the 2,000 mule voters, right? They've got their absentee ballots. Well, the only way they can do it is they can either mail it in, which they don't trust, or they can bring it to the local election board on election day. And they can turn it in then. Well, those take days to count. The ones that arrive, absentee ballots that arrive on that day are the last to be counted. Yeah, so I do want to warn people, early vote totals out of Arizona are going to heavily favor the Democrats. Do not be surprised if the first returns come out of Maricopa County and it shows Carrie Lake losing and it shows Blake Masters losing. Don't be surprised by that. Because the day of voting is counted last, and absentee ballots turned in on the day of voting are absolutely last and don't get counted until like Thursday or Friday. So people should definitely not be freaking out and talking about how the election has been stolen when the first returns come in showing Lake and Masters behind. Now, conversely, if those first votes come in and they show Lake with a small lead and Masters behind by like 1% or something like that, it's going to be a blowout. Then the polling has been wrong, and you're going to see Lake win by 8 or 9 and Masters win by 6 or 7. In general, Masters is polling about 2% behind Lake right now. So
before you go on, let's just take a quick break for a breather, and then we can come back in and jump on to the next states. You're listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast with the pre-election special. Don't go anywhere. We're back, JJ Sefton, CBD, with the great Dave in Florida, our election prognosticator par excellence, with his final prognostications 4 days from the possible red wave tsunami that will wipe out the Democrats. So we were talking about, and we're continuing to talk about, the ones that Dave thinks are pretty much in the bags for the GOP. Dave, continuing right along.
Okay, well, let me knock out a couple really quick here. Missouri, obviously over. Ohio has been over since the primary. Ryan is, I'll predict right now, Ryan is going to lose his district to J.D. Vance, that his actual district will vote for J.D. Vance.
Well,
also over North Carolina. North Carolina has been over for ages. The local North Carolina politicos have let it slip out that they think Beasley is going to lose that badly. So that one is over.
Well, Bud's been up consistently, I mean, a five, yeah. Well, 3, 5, 7.
Yeah, well, but then you have, oh, man, I hate to talk bad about him, but then you have, like, Decision Desk coming out and say, well, Beasley has a chance. It's like, Beasley's never had a chance. It's ridiculous. You talk to them privately and you say, oh, yeah, well, Beasley's going to lose that. But then they make some public statement about, because she's gotten so much fundraising, she has a chance. Well, she never did.
Yeah, even Marist has Bud up by 4 points, which, yeah. I mean, that I always add 7 or 8 to a Marist,
yeah,
poll.
So. Oh, yeah, a Marist poll is always off by 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Is that the race, or was it some other Carolina, North Carolina race where I believe I'm seeing they're talking about that one as a real bellwether for the nation in general?
I'm not sure if I would call it that. Maybe I'm just not knowing where you're. Unless you're talking about a House race.
It might have been a House race. I think it was PJ Media that was touting. There was sort of an unknown race that was sort of under the radar that nobody was really paying attention to, and they're saying, like an idiot, I should have written this down, but they're saying that this particular race is going to be an indicator of the mood of the nation. Well, just to the extent that it can be, but anyway.
Okay. Couple things I think that are pretty solid for the Democrats. You know, let's go the other way. Colorado, Bennett's going to win that. What's his name? O'Day or Shea, something like that.
You know, Day.
Not a very good campaigner.
No, trashing Trump was the dumbest move ever.
Yeah.
And you know, his support has collapsed as a result. He was kind of had a shot, you know, a minor shot before, but once he decided to try to play to the anti-Trump, that killed his chances. I mean, that's something you just can't do right now. You can't do that in this election. You can't do that predict right now, you cannot do that in 2024. Being anti-Trump is the kiss of death, because so many of the voters are Trump voters. And you may like them, you may hate them, you may want them in the election, you may want them out of the election, you may, you know, whatever you want to do about Trump, there is a very, very large group of voters that are very much tied to Trump. And they'll give you a chance if Trump is quiet. If Trump endorses you, they're going to be very enthusiastic. But if you trash Trump, that's it. You're dead. And you've seen that so far. Only one in Washington 4 has survived of the ones that voted to impeach Trump.
And what's irritating is not irritating. It's so obvious that it's very easy to avoid discussing Donald Trump. You know, somebody asks you about Trump and you say, you know, I'd rather talk about the current events. I'd rather talk about the economy. I'd rather talk about 100 other things. And the segue away from Donald Trump should, for any competent politician, be a trivial process.
It is trivial. All you have to say is he's not on the ballot.
Resist. Yeah, they can't resist.
Yeah.
And it bites them in the ass, as you pointed out.
It's nuts. It's stupid. So anyway, Colorado is going to be a loss for us. Utah, that's been over for ages. That whole thing with McMuffin, I think, was really, I think that was just Mike Lee sucking up some campaign dollars, you know, that he absolutely didn't need. Some governor races, I think, that are over. Massachusetts is over. Maryland is over. Those are going to be two pickups, by the way. You know, Democrats are going to pick up two governors, both in Maryland and Massachusetts.
Well, neither of them matter because
they don't matter, but were
essentially Democrats.
They don't matter. They matter to the betting people because one of the betting lines is how many governors you end up with. And right now the betting line is, I think, about 31.5. Currently, the number of Republican governors is 27. So I think the current 50-50 odds is basically a 5.5 pickup in governors, which includes losing, you know, two gimmies, you know, Maryland and Massachusetts. So it's seven. The bettors think that seven governor mansions are going to flip. So Schumer's going to win. You know,
unfortunately.
That's pretty much a done deal. Let's go to a couple of the more interesting ones. Let's go ahead and cover Pennsylvania because
can we back up and let's return to New York for just a moment?
Sure.
Because you mentioned
So we talked a lot about Zeldin.
Yeah.
Okay, the last podcast I know both of you guys are New York guys, so you really want to talk Zeldin. Okay.
All right.
I don't want to chew up the whole podcast just on New York though.
Okay. I'm in Wisconsin now, so whatever, but I had left my heart in.
I know. Flat. Here's the bottom line on Zeldin. New York is a +30 Democrat state, so it's hard. Now he can win, and the polling has been consistent that he's either really close or even ahead. He's going to romp on Long Island. So both the counties on Long Island, he's going to win handily. He's going to win upstate handily. He's going to win from Westchester up, maybe not handily, but enough. And it's really going to come down to the five boroughs. Can he get enough of a share out of the five boroughs? If he can do that, if he can get 35% share out of the five boroughs, then yeah, he'll be the governor.
Well, you know, Hochul has literally imploded, and spectacularly so, just in the last couple of weeks. I mean, just now there was a story in the New York Post about a guy who was let out on bail reform, and a day later he literally brutally executed his girlfriend and girlfriend. And she made this gaffe statement saying, you know, well, crime is, you know, it's not important and it's an illusion. And, you know, it's not like I said at the beginning of the podcast, it's not just people, you know, your conservatives, Republicans that are paying attention to this. People in the streets, people, you know, the people who actually take the subways most often, which are the mostly poor people, working class people, and minorities, are getting shoved on the subway tracks, mugged, and their children killed. And this clueless woman is stating that this is not really a problem. I think that's going to have an effect. And people are furious with her and that knucklehead Adams in New York City. Now, is the machine in New York going to be a factor? Well, it probably, you know, we all know that it's one of the most corrupt places in America. But the rage in these traditional constituencies over crime, which is the New York issue as much as the economy, if not more, that's got to overcome it. That's got to give Zeldin a boost. And if you're saying, Dave, that it's usually +30 state and he's within a point or two, it's got to be close.
New York is going to ride the wave like everybody, like all of the other states. And that's what I'm going to talk about a bunch of governor races, but I'm going to lump New York in with that. A lot of these races are dependent on how big the wave is. It's going to be a wave. How big is it? And this gets back to what I talked about before. Are we in a Republican plus 3, plus 4, plus 5, plus 6 year? And it's going to be rising tide lifts all boats. And you're going to see that because we are seeing national trends. If you look at early vote trends in all of the states, they are the same. You are significantly less early voting than you saw in 2020. Pretty big drop in early voting from 2018. Heavy Republican turnout in early voting. Very light Democrat turnout in early voting. And especially when you look at the subsamples for who is voting. So black turnout is particularly low. Hispanic is slightly off. White turnout is up, both Democrat and Republican. And you see things like in Miami-Dade. We're in the early vote period and Republicans are leading in Miami-Dade.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay?
That's never happened before. That has never happened. DeSantis is going to win Miami-Dade. That is a sea change event. So I cannot overemphasize this. A lot of my predictions and a lot of the polling is based on kind of tempered expectations. And if the Republican turnout and the independent support for Republicans continue the way it's showing in the early vote and all the polling about enthusiasm for voting on election day turns out to be true, then we could be looking at a much bigger number of flip seats than we were anticipating, than my original prediction.
I think in Florida, there was some sort of a record broken where it was like 9-1 voter registration GOP versus Democrat, some huge number of percentage that was like, again, it was like never before seen. So this is, this is a state that only however many years ago, we were literally close to Andrew Gillum becoming the governor. I mean, think about that. And of course, you know, all the nonsense that would have happened had that happened, not DeSantis. But,
I wonder though if the new Republican registrations are a function of people moving out of New York, moving out of Illinois and moving to Florida.
There's actually very good evidence that changes in registration and changes in voting patterns in Florida, Texas, and Arizona are being driven specifically by conservatives and Republicans leaving New York, Illinois, and California.
That's great news because usually I remember, you know, Mark Levin always talks about the locusts who leave, you know, blue hellholes that they contributed to and turning the places they go to into blue hellholes.
And that has turned out to be completely wrong. That is not the way it, quite frankly, Ted Cruz would have lost if it wasn't for transplants.
Oh, you know, that's interesting.
Native Texans voted against Cruz.
Ted Cruz is a fascinating politician. His instincts are awful.
Terrible.
He often says the wrong thing. And yet his voting record is fine. Anyway, so let's get back to the
I've actually met Ted Cruz personally. He's actually a very smart guy. You know, he never has to use notes for any of his speeches. He can do it all completely off the cuff. He doesn't need a teleprompter.
There you go.
I'm with you on that. I get you.
I mean, I think Dershowitz claimed he was the smartest student he ever had in his law school at Harvard Law.
That doesn't surprise me at all. But instincts and intelligence are often
That's
quite
true.
Dissimilar.
When you compare Trump and Ted Cruz and when they faced off in 2016. There you go.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to the election.
Pennsylvania. I want to spend a few minutes here on Pennsylvania because this is a fascinating race in some ways. First of all, Oz is going to win this. That part of it is over. Oz, I think I told you this before, Oz appeals to people. He's walking the streets in Philadelphia and getting mobbed. I'm not talking about the collar counties. I'm talking Philadelphia, downtown, south side. Yeah, he's not, you know, they love him. They love him in Philadelphia. They love him in Pittsburgh. So he is pulling unusually high vote shares out of these two traditionally Democrat areas, both in the Pittsburgh area and the Philadelphia area.
And those are where the heart of the steel was in 2016.
Correct. So where I think we are right now is Oz is going to win. I think he's going to win comfortably. He could win big. I mean, we could be at the end of the day and you could have a Oz plus 8 or 9. That's entirely within the realm of possibility. The way he has connected with people, and he was a very smart politician. He stayed off of the airwaves and did not get into the media war before the last 3 weeks or so. He spent his entire time visiting every precinct in the entire state, getting out there, getting to know people. And when he did, people liked him. You know, people got to know him, especially the women. He's a charmer. So he is polling very well with women, especially people who have met him and then have told their girlfriends. You know, so he's doing very well. Now, Mastriano, this is the race I'm the most bearish on. And if you've held a gun to my head to say who is going to win, I would say Shapiro. I think the numbers right now say Mastriano is going to win or are going to lose by 3 or 4 points. However, and a lot of my data comes from, you know, by paying attention to what Rich Barris is doing and what he's polling. And he is polling Mastriano 3 or 4 points behind right now. And Mastriano is suffering because Republican Governors Association pulled their support for him. It's an open secret that the establishment wants him to lose. They do not want a Republican governor in Pennsylvania, because they view Pennsylvania as their firewall against Trump winning in 24. So they really would like Shapiro there to allow them to engineer another steal in Pennsylvania. Now, having said that, though, and this is something even Rich Barris says, there is a high possibility for a miss in the polling in Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania is trending unlike every other state. You look at New Hampshire, you look at Michigan, you look at Washington, you're seeing these candidates surge as more and more people make their decisions and start getting themselves into a mindset of I'm voting Republican, or I'm not bothering to vote because I'm a diehard Democrat, but there's no point in this. The only race that's not happening is the governor's race in Pennsylvania, and that makes me scratch my head. What the hell's going on here? Why is this race not like all of the others? And logic tells you it probably is like all of the others, and there's just something that's being missed here. Now, one of the things that could be being missed, and Rich Barris admits this freely, he thinks it is entirely possible that the Mastriano voters just can't be reached by pollsters. Literally cannot be reached. They, you know, a pollster reaches out, they have no mechanism to talk to a Mastriano voter. And those are people from southwestern Pennsylvania. Those are people in the T. Those are people in Lancaster County. Those are Amish people. You know, there are just a large swath of working class people in Pennsylvania, which is the majority of the voters in Pennsylvania. People forget that. You know, everybody talks about the highly educated in Pennsylvania around the Philadelphia. The majority of voters in Pennsylvania are steel workers. They're oil workers. They are working class in the middle of the state, in the southwestern part of the state. They're the majority. And if the pollsters have been unable to get to them, have been unable to do that, they have been compensated. You know, the polls have been compensating by, well, I found some Republicans, okay? I found some Republicans in that area, and the Republicans they found are the ones that are willing to vote for Oz but not willing to vote for Mastriano.
So I drove through Pennsylvania on the way to and from Texas a few weeks ago, and Pennsylvania is a very unpleasant place to drive through because it seems like it takes forever. Anyway, I saw maybe one or two Oz signs. I saw no Shapiro signs. I saw no Fetterman signs. I saw no Fetterman's lump signs. But I saw a lot of Mastriano signs, which I thought was interesting. It means nothing, of course. That's anecdotal.
No, actually, it does mean something.
It's a tiny little sample, but I found that interesting.
So I'd be willing to bet you saw that you did not see those when you were driving through Philadelphia. I bet you saw that when you were driving through the middle part of the state.
Absolutely.
Or the southwestern part of the state.
Absolutely.
You're driving through DuBois and Bradford and all these places where, you know, and this is something that, you know, people don't realize. Pennsylvania is oil country. Pennsylvania was where the first oil wells in this country were. And now with fracking, after they played out, now with fracking, they still have a vast untapped resource of oil that could make Pennsylvania, you know, as rich possibly as North Dakota with the boom with the shale deposit. I forget the name of it. But because Lumpy doesn't want and the crazy green wacko communists don't want to have fracking in the state, they're basically putting all these blue collar workers who, as Dave says, we can't reach them via the polls out of business and putting them in the breadline. It's too bad in a way that Oz doesn't go out and campaign with Mastriano and just put them together and go the oil route, so to speak. But that is, well, we got 4 days left. I don't know if that's going to make a difference, but you know, this is a huge thing. And Lumpy went out there and he's been flip flopping on oil. I mean, forget about the fact that he's got a stroke, but you know, in 2018, he basically was anti fossil fuels. And now all of a sudden, oh, I've never been anti fossil fuels. Well, there's the tail of the tape. Of course you were. So will it make a difference? Who knows?
Well, we'll see. I don't think there's any question Oz is going to win. So that's going to be a hold in the Senate. And the question in my mind is Mastriano. My gut feeling is Mastriano should win. But, you know, the evidence that I can see right now points to Shapiro winning this one. And so I'm torn. I'm really torn on this race. Is there no hope? Absolutely, there's hope on this. There is very interesting evidence, both in terms of turnout and in terms of demographics, that the pollsters are just missing Mastriano's, a large chunk of Mastriano support. So we'll see. Okay. Now, I do want to talk later about fraud, and Pennsylvania is one of three states where fraud will be an issue. So that could be, I mean, if it was a clean election in Pennsylvania, I think it's much more likely Mastriano would win.
Well, let's take a break for a moment. Dave in Florida, our polling prognosticator par excellence, CBD and JJ Steffen on the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks Radio Network. Don't touch that dial. We're back. I had a bit of a chuckle with the CBD about something, and we'll get to it in a second. JJ Steffen here along with Dave in Florida for the pre-midterm 2022 prediction spectacular. And there are a few more races that Dave in Florida wants to get to. I think Senate we're almost done with, and then we're going to get to the governorships. But I guess we're just going state by state at this point. But Dave, take it away.
Okay, so I do want to talk about Nevada. That one, I think, is probably done at this point. Now, Nevada is one where there was the potential for, and probably is still the potential for, some fraud. You have to pay attention, though, to how the fraud is executed in the different states. You know, we were talking about Pennsylvania. Okay, a lot of fraud is through the precincts in Philadelphia. Well, Nevada, the fraud is a mail-in voting scheme. They try to send out ballots to everybody, hoping that they get back a bunch of fraudulent votes. The problem with that is you can only cheat as many votes as you received ballots back. And they have a very strict mechanism for counting how many ballots have been received back. I haven't looked at this in the last couple of days, but I think as of Wednesday, I took a look at the ballot return. Now, in 2020, there were 1.3 million mail-in ballots returned in a state that Biden won by like 20,000, something extremely tight. Okay. As of Wednesday, the total return was 300,000. It was a million less.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
That's huge.
And the estimates right now are that all of that mail-in vote is now in. They might have a 500,000 or so, that have come in. And the guy, everybody talks about John Ralston, who is just a huge partisan hack. But even he's admitting that that there are no more mail-in votes to come in, that there's none of them sitting in a post office somewhere, and what they've got in the offices now is the full amount that they have to work with. Now, how many of those are fraudulent? Good question. Okay. They certainly tried to send out ballots, you know, effectively soliciting, hey, this household got four ballots. Hey, if you send four back, everybody's going to kind of wink and nudge and say, oh, I guess they're all valid. And, you get to vote four times. Okay. But the cap you've got is how many ballots are there in the first place, right? So where you've got is Laxalt has about a 3-point lead. Lombardo is done. Okay. He's about 5 points ahead. There is no amount of fraud that can keep him from winning the governor's mansion in Nevada. Okay. So the question is Laxalt. And then the also question is how many of those votes that say they're from a Democrat are actual Laxalt votes. Okay. He has done extremely well with the Hispanic community in Clark County. Okay. There is a lot of enthusiasm for him with Hispanics. So a much larger share of those, of the legitimate Democrat votes in Clark County, when they open them up, they're going to say Laxalt. They're not going to be for the Democrat. My back of the envelope estimate is that from a legitimate standpoint, Laxalt wins that race by about 55,000 votes. So they would have to come up with a net 55,000 out of that 500,000 mail-in ballots that they've had returned. That's a big lift. That's a really, really huge lift. That's a whole lot different than coming up with about, 20,000 votes out of 1.3 million. So that's a big difference. So that's, while I think there will be fraud in Nevada, I don't think it's enough. It's definitely not enough to keep Lombardo out of office. And I don't think it's going to be enough to keep Laxalt from winning that. But we'll see. That's one of the states where there is a potential for fraud, as in Pennsylvania.
We've overcome the cheat. Wow. Three cheers.
Well, some states did very well. Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin. They cleaned up their act. The chances of fraud in Arizona are pretty small right now because they have voter ID now. They have signature matching is being very strongly enforced this year. There are two ballot measures that make it even harder to cheat in the future, and those ballot measures are going to pass. They're throwing away the ability to use two alternate forms of identification. Oh, I can't remember what the other one is, but it's also a real hard requirement. Oh, I know what it is, that there is there will be individual voter ID with all absentee ballots going forward.
Oh,
how racist is that?
Yeah, that's horrible. Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, Arizona is one of the states where election integrity is actually pretty high on the list of importance to the voter. So how many of those are going to vote for Mark Kelly? Not many. So I think Senate. Oh, how could I forget New Hampshire?
Yes. Interesting.
Okay, that's not one I think is done, but I think Baldock's going to win that. And the reason I think Baldock's going to win that is, first of all, Sununu's at the top of the ticket, and he's going to win easily.
Yeah, he's very popular.
He's very popular. He's going to win easily. And it's looking like New Hampshire 1 is going to flip. And I don't see people going, okay, I'm voting Sununu and I'm voting Republican in New Hampshire 1, but yeah, I'm going to vote for Maggie Hassan, who everybody hates. That's just not, I just don't see that happen. So I think Baldock, I don't think that one's done yet, but I think he has a very good chance of winning New Hampshire. I think it's over 50%.
And this is a man who Mitch McTrader, pulled all the funding from.
Oh, yeah.
God. And I think Rick Scott, though, from what I understand, came to the rescue with quite a bit of money for him to boost the campaign.
Yeah. New Hampshire is one of those states that, at least from my uneducated viewpoint, money isn't going to do a whole lot because the only significant TV market is Boston. Mm-hmm. And it may be, yeah, that's pretty much it. And it's going to be very expensive for them to run ads out of Boston, hoping that it's going to cover New Hampshire. So there's probably a lot more retail campaigning in New Hampshire, and that's probably more effective for Bolduc than for Hassan, because she really is an unpleasant harrier.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she, you know, polling on her was, does she deserve re-election? She was well below 50%. So people don't think she deserves re-election. Now, it was Shaheen. Yeah, Shaheen. If it was her, she would win. Okay, she's much more popular than Maggie Hassan is. But unfortunately for Hassan, she's running in a red year. That's not, you know, I don't see her surviving when the Democrats are having to defend Patty Murray in Washington. It's hard to see. But again, I don't think that one is assured the way I think that Arizona and Georgia and Wisconsin are. So anyway, let's talk about Washington a little bit. Tiffany Smiley is a very good candidate. The life story there is just an amazing one. Her husband continuing as an Army officer despite losing his eyesight in Iraq.
It's a magnificent story.
It's an amazing story.
Two very impressive people.
And Patty Murray is without a doubt the stupidest person in Washington. I mean, she, even her campaign staffers say how stupid she is. She is not a very, very bright person. So what has the potential to save her is that Washington is 100% mail-in ballots. So you have Seattle. So that's another one I view as being, it probably leans towards Murray because of the structure of the state, not because of the quality of the candidates. But it's a distinct possibility. And given the fact that's where all the money is being spent right now, I mean, you've got Biden and Kamala both campaigning for Murray in Washington. If they're having to campaign in places like New York and Illinois and Washington, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, I was just going to say that is that it's the fact that these, it just seems that there's nowhere safe, even safe seats. There's nowhere safe. The mood of the nation, regardless of where you are, is real rage and anger at the American left and the Democrat Party. Whether there's enough to overcome these things is the issue. But yeah, when they're coming out and sounding the alarm bells over Patty Murray, who's been there for infecting D.C. for like 30 years already. I mean, yeah. It's like a tick, you know, whatever.
So anyway, we'll see what happens in Washington. A lot of people there. This is another one of those states where the voters are going to hold on to their ballots and they're going to show up on election day to turn in their mail-in ballots at the Board of Election. And as the returns come in, the thing to look for is when they'll say estimated vote in. When that number drops, you know, they'll say something like, okay, we have 40% estimated vote in. And then, you know, an hour later they say we have 35% estimated vote in. That means they got a lot more ballots on election day than they were anticipating. Most of their count is based on what they received up to the election day, and they don't expect people to be dropping them off. And that's what happened in Washington 3. A lot of Joe Kent voters showed up on election day, so it took a week to finish that race. But as that week went on, you kept seeing his numbers go up. And that's because a lot of people showed up with their ballot. It's entirely likely you're going to see for a week, every number is going to show Patty Murray's ahead, Patty Murray's ahead, Patty Murray's ahead. And then at the very last minute, Smiley wins the race because all of her vote was turned in at the election supervisor office on election day.
To me, this is indicative of the United States of America finally waking up and realizing that our elections are broken.
Yeah,
and they absolutely are trying to mitigate that as much as they can as individuals. And it's heartening, although it's simultaneously heartening and quite depressing that we have to worry about this kind of stuff.
Oh, but it's ridiculous we have to go through it.
Yeah, as I said, perhaps it is an indication that America is finally waking up.
Yeah. It's the same thing with this ranked choice voting thing that screwed up Sarah Palin.
Yeah, I was going to get to that next. I wanted to tell you, Alaska, yeah, I think odds are Murkowski wins that, and it's going to be because of ranked choice. Murkowski voters are going to put down the Democrat as the second choice. Democrats are going to put down Murkowski as a second choice. And you end up with Kelly, whose last name I can't pronounce. She ends up frozen out on that. But, you know, it's possible. I mean, Mitch McConnell really, really screwed up when, you know, he started running attack ads against her. So you could see a backlash on it. It is a small population state, so it doesn't take a lot of people getting mad to make a difference there.
Yeah, from what I understand, the way to try to beat the cheat there that may be effective is when you do ranked choice voting, just don't fill out the
vote. Don't vote for the second and third.
I'm not sure. Someone who's better at math than me has said that, I think, but I'm not sure. To me, the math doesn't seem to add up. If the Murkowski voters and the Democrat voters are voting for each other, they're effectively getting two votes. Well, Kelly is getting one vote. Okay,
no, that decreases the chance of a Democrat winning.
Yeah,
it does not increase the chance of Chewbacca winning.
Right.
So in the long term, it's probably a good idea. In the short term, of course, I agree, Dave. I don't think the math does add up. But
I just think that ranked choice theory is probably going to end up with Murkowski winning.
Yeah.
That now I do. Feel kind of bullish though on Palin winning, so I don't think that Democrat survives to the next term. I think Palin or whoever the other guy was. I think it's a common name. He's somebody from anyway. Yeah,
I don't remember.
Yeah. Anyway, I think one of the Republicans wins the House seat there. Okay, so I think I've covered all the Senate. I don't think I've missed any of those.
How about North Carolina?
No, North Carolina, Bud's going to win that easily.
Okay.
We talked about Beasley, and he has no chance. Yeah. I just wanted to kind of do a big bunch of governor races, okay? Maine is in play. Don't be surprised if Republican wins there. New York, we talked about. Zeldin, don't be surprised if Zeldin wins. Michigan. You know, I was bearish on Dixon before. I'm less bearish now. It's the groundswell of support within Michigan looks pretty strong, and she's starting to win some polling. Well, I don't think it's a done deal, much the same way I do with New Hampshire. I think Dixon probably has the edge. And that's the third state I want to talk about from a fraud standpoint. You do still have fraud in Detroit, and they're going to do fraud in Detroit. But it's limited to the fraud in Detroit. So the question is, how much Dixon support is there outside of Wayne County, and how much she pulls in the southeastern section? I think that's Macomb County down there. I'm not 100% sure. And up north and on the western side of Michigan. You know, the District 3 and District 4 are looking very solid right now, and if those are solid, then Dixon should be getting a solid vote share out of those districts. And that will be that's Grand Rapids area. District 3 is Grand Rapids. So
she seems to be surging.
She is absolutely surging.
I think a lot of it's the backlash against Gretchen Whitmer over her horrendous, dictatorial shenanigans during the whole COVID lockdown.
So she's not alone. You are going to see a lot of the COVID governors are about to get punished. You're going to see the same thing in Minnesota. Minnesota is in play. We just talked about Nevada. That's a COVID one. I think Oregon is gone. I think Drazen. Anyway, I think she's going to win. You know, the early vote numbers in Portland are way down. Early vote numbers in the rest of the state are way up. And every time the polling has shifted with numbers moving away from that independent, they've gone to the Republican. They have not gone to the Democrat. I think Oregon is going to flip. Let's see. What else is there? I talked about Minnesota. I talked about Maine.
I think Illinois is probably the lost cause. Is Pritzker up?
No, Illinois is in play.
Really?
Believe it or not, Illinois. Now that's probably my lowest one on what I think could happen. But Illinois is actually in play. And, you know, Biden and Harris are in Chicago this weekend. What race are they trying to goose? There's only one race in Illinois that matters right now, and that's the governor. And that, I can't remember his name, but the Republican candidate is very good. So that is one that there's a possibility, not a huge possibility, but there's a possibility that he could win that race. So don't be surprised if on Thursday we're talking about the amazing results and unbelievably Illinois flipped.
Well, Illinois flips. That's as solid an indication of what's bigger than a tsunami. That would be amazing.
Yeah. You know, well, that's extinction level event for the Democrats at that point. So, I forgot to talk about Connecticut, and I do want to talk about Connecticut really quickly. And that's one. Yeah, Blumenthal is very, very likely to win re-election. But Connecticut is a state that the fundamentals are going to work against him for two reasons. First of all, heavy Hispanic population in the Hartford area, and the Hispanics have been shifting towards the GOP. That's one area. Plus, the woman running against Blumenthal is Hispanic, and she's like running all of her ads in Spanish right now.
Leora Levy.
Yeah. So she's Jewish Hispanic, Jewish Cuban.
She her family fled to Cuba. Yeah.
So this is one where the fundamentals actually favor her because of the demographics of the state. And the other thing is Connecticut. Everybody forgets Connecticut is pretty heavy working class. So outside of the area near New York, there's a lot of working class in Connecticut. And again, that's a demographic that is favoring Republicans right now. So it's much like we were talking about New York. New York is Democrat plus 30. Connecticut is a very high Democrat state, but the fundamentals don't favor Blumenthal this time. So that one, I think it's going to be close no matter what, and you could end up seeing him lose. It's possible.
Oh, how sweet would that be?
That would be. Now, I'm not putting money on it.
The possibility of it is tantalizing. I mean, believe me, it would be so nice to see Chuck Schumer on his ass, but I mean, obviously that ain't going to happen. But still, look, if you lose him, you lose Patty Murray, you lose some of these most horrible human beings. It's nice to even have that possibility. And it just speaks that beyond the elections, and I think we'll talk about this in another segment, the mood of the nation is changing in ways that we are getting an inkling of with this election.
Yeah. So anyway, I think I got to all of the governor races. I talked to Oregon, I talked to Minnesota. Oh, by the way, Keith Ellis is going to lose in Minnesota.
Oh, that's excellent news.
He's going to lose.
He is the epitome of the race-baiting, criminal-loving scum that has unfortunately taken over our judicial system.
Yeah. Oh, there was Kansas, I think, is currently held by a Democrat. That's going to flip. And Oklahoma, is that a governor or Senate race? There was some nonsense about polls showing that could flip to the Democrats. That's not going to happen. Oklahoma.
Yeah. The governor's name is Stitt, I think.
Yes, it is Stitt.
And he's not the cleanest governor in the country. Yeah, let's put it that way.
But this is not an environment that someone's going to pick off a Republican governor in a red state.
Yeah,
just not going to happen this year. So anyway, I think that covers the governors. I think that covers the Senate. Just final count on Senate. Remember, I said at the beginning my estimate was 52. I think we are at 53 solid with Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin. No, I'm sorry, not Arizona, Georgia, and Nevada flipping, and Republicans holding Pennsylvania. So I think that's solid 53. New Hampshire, if that goes away, I think it's going to go, makes it 54. And if you have something like Murray losing in Washington, then that's 55.
Oh, wow. And even Blumenthal. Yikes.
Yeah. That would be insane.
That would be insane level. Yeah. So there you have it. Let's take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, I think we want to discuss what this all means beyond politics for the nation going forward. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on the Cut the Jib Newsletter Radio Network. And we're back for a brief final segment. J.J. Sefton, CBD, and Dave in Florida with the pre-election final thoughts and predictions in the bag. Dave has some very good prognostications to make you feel good. If we missed your state or your district, it's just impossible to cover everything, and we just wanted to get the most crucial things that are indicative of the potential sea change. And speaking of sea changes, we want to talk about what does this all mean for the nation and for our society going forward. Gentlemen.
So, again, I've done most of the talking. I'll continue doing that, I'm sure, here. But I do want to point out something. So right now, I find it interesting that we have two defectors on each side. We have Tulsi Gabbard leaving the Democrat Party, and we have Liz Cheney leaving the Republican Party and endorsing the other side. Well, that has been I do want to point out, and I know there's a lot of uncertainty or distrust regarding Tulsi Gabbard. But I want to point out that every place she has gone and every candidate she has endorsed has surged right after that. She has added 2 or 3 points to every candidate. What she's doing is effective, and she is speaking to a portion of the electorate. I think they're mostly Democrats that are tired of the nonsense, and they are willing to change their vote in order to teach the I don't know if it's teach a lesson, but basically vote for America and the end of the idiocy that we're dealing with right now. The opposite side is Liz Cheney. She's the anti-endorsement. You saw that letter that Carrie Lake sent out that her Carrie Lake's numbers went up when Liz Cheney had endorsed her opponent.
I was just going to say that she was out campaign stumping for Alyssa Slotnick or Slotkin or whatever her name is in Michigan, and all of a sudden she's lost points. She's lost traction to her opponent.
Oh, so, absolutely. You know, so, I think you could see Slotnick or however it's pronounced. I think she's going to – yeah, I think that's Michigan 7. I think she's going to lose that race. I think Michigan 7 is going to flip. You also have down ballot. One of the things people don't really pay attention to that – North Carolina legislature right now is on track to become a supermajority. They've got a Democrat governor, and there are some very disturbing things, especially vaccines for kids that are now of a concern to parents in North Carolina, and they're voting appropriately. And one of the ways they know they can do that is if the legislature becomes a supermajority, they can stop anything that governor tries to do. Look for that. Look for North Carolina to move to a supermajority. Yeah, you could see that in other states.
I would like to get back to Tulsi Gabbard for just one second. She is a very appealing force in American politics for obvious reasons. She's rational. She has never embraced the most lunatic fringe of the Democrat Party. But let's not pretend that she is a conservative in any way. She is Democrat.
No, she's
she
not.
Believes in
She's aligned on – keep in mind, MAGA isn't Republican either. This is a populist movement that you are seeing, and there is a cross-section between Democrats, independents, and Republicans that this is forming a new national majority that is populist, and it is against the establishment. And while Tulsi Gabbard is a Democrat on certain issues, she is very populist. Opposition to wars, especially what's going on in Ukraine. There's a long list of things where I don't agree with her, but I find myself in agreement with her on a lot more things than I ever thought I would be. Same thing with people like Glenn Greenwald. Suddenly I find myself nodding in agreement with things he said, something 20 years ago I thought was absolutely impossible. You're seeing a realignment of American politics in a populist mode, not a party mode.
You speak of Glenn Greenwald, and he is a very dyed-in-the-wool, hey, using the word leftist, but he's a liberal. Yeah. But here's the thing. He and people like Naomi Wolf, and we've talked about, and Matt Taibbi, at least, you know, let them be left, let them be or liberal. But they agree on the core, on some of the most core issues that are so important, especially the freedom of speech, the freedom of conscience, the freedom of thought, and the freedom to express your ideas openly without being censored. And those are the things that I think will ultimately bring people together to compromise. I mean, we talk about the abortion issue. It's like, well, it's an all or nothing thing. And we've said, look, whatever you feel about it, at least we can take the stand where at a certain point you recognize that a life is a life and you can't commit an abortion. But the left never wants to go down that road. They want it as an all or nothing proposition. Literally, you know, just as an example, just postnatal, you can kill the kid. Or, you know, if it's an abortion gone wrong, we won't even save the child. So at least we have this movement, just as that issue as an example, where people can come together, whereas now you just have the complete demonization of us as conservatives, as people that want to have some sort of normalcy again. So this is, I think, a positive step. I mean, yeah, Tulsi is, she's a Democrat, and she always will be a Democrat, but, you know, or at least be liberal in certain things. But the core principles of keeping our national security, our freedoms, and these issues at the forefront, man, she's certainly appealing to me. I have no problems with her. Definitely much more than, you know, you can talk to her. You can have a reasonable, cogent discussion with her about whatever the issue you want to talk about. Anybody else, forget it. You're a racist, evil, knuckle-dragging cancer that has to be eradicated.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, that we've moved beyond the traditional definition of populism into more of a national populism or nationalist populism. You know, you go back 100 years, and a populist, it was in many ways indistinguishable from a socialist. And yet, today, a populist is, in many parts of the country, that's a dirty word. Because the idea that America is important, that the people of America are important, is anathema to our elites. Anyway, that was my point about Tulsi Gabbard. I think she is a populist, but she is also a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. Let's not pretend that fast forward 20 years, President Gabbard is going to shrink the size of the federal government. That's all.
No, I agree.
Dave, I'm going to let you have the last word, but I'm going to have the penultimate word if I can, or maybe CBD, if you want to jump in. I don't want to hog your spotlight. But before we went, we were recording, we were talking about, you know, it's just a shame that so many people, Dave, you know, rip you a new one and try to move the goalposts on your predictions, you know, whenever, or people who are the constant wet, you know, just wet blanket over good news or the potential for good news. And people have to understand that one election is not going to make a difference. We're not going to all of a sudden go back to Jeffersonian democracy and the ousting of all Marxist leftism in America. It's not going to happen. This is a very long and drawn out and protracted struggle that we are going through. The significance of elections, what they really mean going forward, and will our party, if they have the majority, will they do the right things or the wrong things notwithstanding? It's a long, drawn out, protracted struggle that we are in. And this is really one of the few ways in which we have to express ourselves and to fight back and to do what's necessary to at least put us on the road of that, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles beginning with a single step. So I think with the election of Trump, that may have been step number one. Maybe with Ronald Reagan, it might have been a baby step number one. But from there, it goes little by little by little and fits and starts. And obviously the stolen election flung us back on our heels, but God forbid forever. But, you know, the last 2 years have woken up a lot of people who we never thought we could wake up. You know, as we have just said, the Glenn Greenwalds of this world, the Tulsi Gabbards and so on and so forth. And hopefully maybe even the Latinos, the blacks, so on and so forth, that just move beyond your prejudices and recognize that what you are going through is horrible and wrong. And just stop voting for your own suicide and just wake up. So hopefully that people will recognize this, that it is a long war.
Well, I would like to leave Dave with the last word, but I would also like to make the point that there is a tone in the United States. It's perhaps an undertone that voting no longer means anything. And I think that if we take no lesson other than this, it is an important thing to know that voting does in fact matter. And, you know, even in the depths of the Soviet Union, people did vote. They knew that their votes would not be counted correctly. They knew that their votes would be simply a rubber stamp for the dictatorial policies of the Politburo. But they voted anyway because it is a connection to the state. It is a connection to the possibility, even the remote possibility, that freedom is coming. And as sometimes pessimistic as I am, I will never not vote. For as long as I live, I will vote every single year. I will vote in off years. I will vote as early and as often as I can, as the saying goes. Anyway, Dave in Florida, you've got the floor.
I'm going to just echo what both of you said. Whether this is a pink election, a red election, a deep red, a wave, a tsunami, whatever it is a step forward. And it starts moving us down the road. And then 2024 election starts the following week. Trump is going to declare here. He's going to declare for president either in a week or two or maybe in January, something like that. The 24 election, you know, season will kick off almost immediately. This is a start, one more step down the road. This is going to be a positive step no matter what happens. A lot of very good candidates are going to Washington. These are people who apparently do not seem to be the type of people. They appear to be quality people who do not appear to be the ones that are going to be sucked into the Washington establishment, which is something that scares Mitch McConnell the most, which is why he keeps pulling funding from people he doesn't think he can trust. So it is a step forward. And I will say that I call doomerism. That is the thing that the leftists and the globalists absolutely want us to do. They want us to believe we have no chance. They want us to believe that all elections are rigged. They want us to believe that our vote does not matter, because then it doesn't. Then it becomes a rubber stamp for them to do whatever they want. The only way we ever get anything different is if we send different people to Washington, and those people represent our desires and the American people, not the establishment and the special interests in Washington. It's the only way we ever have any hope into the future.
Dave in Florida, you are a national treasure, and we are blessed to have you on our team. CBD, ditto. God bless you, my friend. JJ Sefton here for the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast, our pre-election special. Hopefully it is that red wave that Dave predicted we'll be going forward on Tuesday, and we'll probably have you, Dave, back, if not the day after, a couple of days after, for your post-election analysis to see what you got right, what you perhaps got wrong, and maybe some surprises, and hopefully they'll be pleasant surprises. Anyway, that's it for now. We'll see you after the election. Get out and vote early and often, as much as you can. You are listening to and have been listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, and we will see you after the election.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye-bye.
Now's the time for all good men to get together with one another. We got to iron out our problems and iron out our quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And do respect the women of the world. Remember, you all had mothers. We got to make this land better land than the world in which we live. And we got to help each man. Man, with the kindness that we'll give.
I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know darn well we can work it out.
Yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can. Or why can't we? If we want it, yes, we can.
I know we can make it work. I know we can make it if we try.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can.
Great gosh, you're mighty.
Oh, yes,